or her or anyone else. You knew the damage it might do. You only thought of yourself. I wish I'd never known you. Ty's eyes filled with sudden tears. Shocked, Kit fell silent. Ty was Ty. He didn't weep easily, but he was wiping tears from his face with shaking hands. Kit's rage vanished. He wanted to crawl across the hollow toward Ty, who was shaking his head, saying something under his breath in a low voice.
I'm here.
Ty's expression changed completely. There were still tears on his cheeks, but his lips had parted in amazement, in wonder. She knelt at the edge of the hollow, half transparent. The wind didn't lift the edges of her brown hair, nor did she shiver in her long white dress. The dress he had wondered about the night before, thinking she would never have chosen it. Only now did Kit realize that she hadn't. The dress was what she had been burned in. A shadow hunter funeral dress.
Livy,
Ty said. He tried to stand, but the cord of light around his ankle jerked him back down. He tumbled onto some moss. The ghost of Livy Blackthorne smiled. She came down into the hollow, not climbing or falling, but drifting, like a feather on the wind.
What are you doing?
Asked Ty as she knelt down beside him.
I shouldn't have been so angry with you last night, said Livy. You meant well.
You came to apologize? Said Kit. Livy turned to look at him. The gold locket gleamed at her throat. It was strange to see two of it. The one Ty wore, real and shining, and the one that flickered on Livy's neck. A whisper of her memories. Death's way of projecting an image of what people expected Livy to look like.
I forgot, Livy said. You can see ghosts, Arendelle.
She sounded like Livy, but not like Livy. There was a cool distance in her tone, and real Livy would have called him Kit. Still, she bent down to touch Ty's ankle gently, and at her touch, Magnus's chain of light flickered and vanished. Ty struggled to his knees.
Why did you do that? Because you're sorry?
No, said Libby. Ghosts don't really do things because they're sorry.
She touched Ty's cheek, or at least she tried. Her fingers passed through the outline of his body. Ty shivered but kept his gaze locked on her.
Julian and Mark and Helen and Emma are at the Imperishable Fields, said Livy, her eyes unfocused, as if she were seeing what was happening elsewhere. You must go to help them. You must fight in the battle. They need you on their side.
As if it were an afterthought, she turned and touched Kit's chain. It vanished. And so did Livy. She bent her head and was gone. Not even a wisp of mist to show she'd ever been there. Devastation passed over Ty's face, and Kit felt a stab of pity. What would it be like for him if Livy came and went as a ghost? She would never stay long, and there was no way to be sure that if she did go, she would return. It would be like losing her again and again and again. Ty got to his feet. Kit knew he would say nothing about Livy.
You don't have to come to the battle, Ty said. You can stay here.
He began to scramble out of the hollow. Wordlessly, Kit followed. Christina knew her shadow hunter history better than most. As she raced across the green fields, she thought of the past. That here on the Imperishable Fields was where Jonathan Shadow Hunter had battled a legion of demons. As she ran, slashing out with her sword, she followed in his footsteps. Mark was at her side. He was armed with a bow, lighter and smaller than Alex, but capable of shooting with speed and precision. The Unseelie army surged toward them as they pushed their way toward Kieran, and Mark's hand went to his bow over and over, felling trolls and ogres with elf bolts to the throat and chest. Christina swung at the smaller, faster redcaps, hacking and slashing, noting with a distant horror that their own blood vanished against their already blood-stained uniforms. A roar went up from behind them.
What's that?
Mark demanded, wiping blood and sweat from his eyes.
Reinforcements coming to join Horace and the others, Christina said grimly. They were on guard around the city.
Mark swore under his breath.
We have to get to Kieran.
Christina imagined Mark was having the same panic she was. There was only one of Kieran and a mass of redcaps and unseelie foot soldiers, from Kelpies to goblins, who had sworn loyalty to Oban. In whatever direction she glanced, she saw unseelie folk locked in battle with downworlders and shadow hunters. Simon and Isabel were holding off imps with sword and whip, Alec felling ogres one after another with his bow, Maya and Bat tearing at trolls with claws and teeth. In the distance, she saw Emma and Julian fighting back to back, and Jace locked in a fight with Timothy Rockford. But why was Jace using the flat of his blade?
There he is,
Mark said. They had crested a hill. Down the slope was Kieran. He carried the sword Neen had given him and was facing off against the broad-shouldered redcap in massive iron boots. Mark swore.
They call him General Winter because he can wipe out a whole village faster than a deadly frost.
I remember him.
Christina shivered. She recalled the fierce fighting of the redcaps in the throne room of the Unseelie Court.
But he'll kill Kieran. I've read about redcaps. Mark, this is bad.
Mark didn't disagree. He was gazing at Kieran with worried eyes.
Come on.
They made their way down the slope, running past a number of Unseelie soldiers who were racing for the thick of the battle. Oban was still surrounded by a circle of goblins protecting him. A few redcaps had formed a loose group around Winter and Kieran. They seemed to have congregated to enjoy the fight. The redcaps cheered as Winter lunged with his sword staff, landing a glancing blow against Kieran's shoulder. Kieran's white shirt was already striped with blood. His hair was white, the color of snow or ash, his cheekbones blazing with color. He parried the next blow of the sword staff and lunged for Winter's torso. The red-capped general barely slid aside in time to avoid the thrust. General Winter laughed.
What a pity! You fight like a king, he said. In 100 years you might have been good enough to face me.
Bastard, Mark hissed. Christina.
She was already shaking her head.
If we go for Winter now, the other guards will fall on us, she said. Quick, signal Gwyn. He'll attack Oban. It might give us a chance.
Mark's eyes flashed with realization. He cupped a hand around his mouth and whistled, a low, humming, wild hunt whistle that seemed to vibrate inside Christina's bones. A shadow passed across the sky. It wheeled and returned. Gwyn on the back of Orion. He flew low over the field. Christina saw Diana turn and reach up her arms. A moment later, Gwyn had swung her up beside him on Orion. They soared back up into the air, Diana and the leader of the wild hunt. Together they flew low over the goblins surrounding Oban. Diana, her dark hair flying behind her, bent low from the horse's back, swinging her sword down, slicing across the chest of a goblin guard. The others yelled and began to scatter as Diana harried them from the sky, Gwyn grinning from beneath his helmet. But Kieran was still in desperate trouble. He was barely holding off Winter, whose sword staff rang again and again against his blade. As Christina watched in horror, one of Winter's blows knocked Kieran to the ground. He rolled aside and sprang to his feet, barely missing a second deadly strike. Mark and Christina took off running toward him. But a redcap guard who had been watching the fight swung around to block their path. At this close range, Mark's bow was of less use. He drew a short sword from his belt and flung himself at the guard, hacking fiercely at the redcap as he tried to reach Kieran. Another guard rose up in front of Christina. She dispatched him with a slashing blow, rolling under the stabbing path of another spear. A metal boot crushed into her side, and she cried out, feeling her ribs break. Agonizing pain seared through her as she crumpled to the ground. Meanwhile, Oban's goblin guard had had enough. Dropping their weapons in their haste to escape, they fled away from Oban into the thick of the battle, Diana and Gwyn following. Oban, abruptly alone in the field, looked around in furious panic before seizing up a goblin sword.
"Come back, you bastards!"
he shouted.
"Come back here! I order you!"
Gasping in agony, Christina tried to push herself to her feet. The sear of broken bones made her jackknife against the ground. She saw two red caps above her and thought, "This is the end." They fell, one on either side of her, both dead. A blood-covered Mark leaned over her, his face white. "Christina! Christina!" Christina caught at Mark, gasping in pain.
"Irazi!"
Mark fumbled for his steely as Winter shouted aloud,
"King Oban!"
Christina turned her head to the side. Winter stood over Kieran, who was crumpled on the ground, his sword lying shattered at his side. Christina's heart sank even as Mark drew a swift Irazi on her skin. She barely noticed the pain depart.
"Oh, Kieran."
"General Winter!"
Oban cried, waving his hands at the red cap standing over Kieran, as if he were swatting at a fly. Stained lace flew from his sleeves, and his velvet breeches were crushed beyond repair.
"I command you to kill the traitor!"
Winter shook his head slowly. He was a massive figure, his shoulders almost splitting the seams of his blood-dyed uniform.
"You must do this, sire," he said. "It is the only way to render your claim to the throne a true one."
With a petulant frown, Oban, sword at his side, stalked forward, crossing the swatch of grass between himself and Kieran. Mark looked down at Christina. She nodded, "Yes," and he thrust out a hand, raising her to her feet. They looked at each other once. Then Mark broke to the right, darting toward Winter and Kieran. Christina strode to the left and stepped directly in front of Oban.
"You will not touch Kieran," she said. "You will not take another step."
She heard Winter cry out in surprise. Mark had thrown himself on the red cap's back. Winter flung him off, but not before Kieran had staggered to his feet. Oban looked at Christina with exasperation.
"Do you know who I am, Shadow Hunter girl?" he demanded. "Do you dare to cross the path of the unseelie king? You are no one, and nothing important."
Christina raised her sword between herself and Oban.
"I am Christina Mendoza Rosales, and if you hurt or kill Kieran, then you will have to deal with me."
She saw a flicker in Oban's silvery eyes and wondered why she had thought he looked like Kieran. They were nothing alike.
"You are not such stuff as kings are made of," she said in a low voice. "Run now. Leave this behind you, and live."
Oban glanced at Winter, who was battling both Mark and Kieran. They were pressing him back and back. Dead red caps lay scattered across the field. The grass was slippery with blood. In the distance, Gwyn and Diana circled on Orion. In Oban's eyes, Christina saw his horror. Not at the death around him, but at the vision of all of it slipping away. Kingship, riches, power.
"No!"
he cried and lunged at her with his sword. Christina met Oban's blow with her own, swinging her sword in a savage arc. Surprise flickered in his eyes as their blades rang together. He fell back in surprise, but recovered quickly. He was a drunk and a wastrel, but still a prince of faerie. When he lunged again, teeth bared, his sword clanged against hers hard enough to ring down through her bones. She stumbled, caught herself, and slashed at him again and again. He met her blows, his own sword swift and furious. The tip of it nicked her shoulder, and she felt the blood begin to flow. Christina began to pray. "Blessed be the angel, my strength, who teaches my hands for war and my fingers to fight." All her life, she had wanted to do something to ease the pain of the cold piece. Here was her chance. Raziel had brought it to her. She would do this for Emma, for the Blackthorns, for Diego and Jaime, for Mark and Kieran, for all the Rosaleses, for everyone harmed by the peace that was truly a war. A calm stillness filled her heart. She raised her blade as if it were glorious, as if it were a shining blade of heaven. She saw fear in Oban's eyes, even as he moved to strike out at her again, bringing his sword around in a sideways arc. She spun in a full circle, avoiding his blow, and as she turned, she drove her blade between his ribs. A sigh seemed to pass through the world. She felt the metal of her sword grind against bone, felt hot blood splash over her fist. She jerked the sword back. Oban staggered, gazing down in disbelief at the blood spreading across the front of his doublet.
You,
he breathed, still in disbelief.
Who are you?
No one important.
But there was no point speaking. Oban had slumped to the ground, his hands falling loose at his sides, his eyes filming over. He was dead. Mark and Kieran were battling desperately and heedlessly on. Christina knew they were fighting not for their own lives, but for each other.
Prince Oban is dead,
she shouted.
Oban is dead!
She stepped forward on the blood-wet grass, calling to Winter, to Mark and Kieran, to everyone who could hear. It was General Winter who heard her cry. He stood as tall and forbidding as a wall between Christina and the boys she loved. His red-capped head turned. His red eyes took in Christina, and then what lay behind her, a heap of blood and velvet. His knuckles, where he held his sword, went white. For a moment, Christina pictured him taking his revenge for his king on Kieran and Mark. Her breath caught in her throat. Ponderous and terrifying as an avalanche, Winter sank slowly to his knees. He bowed his blood-darkened head. His voice boomed like thunder as he said,
My liege lord, King Kieran.
Kieran and Mark stood side by side, blades still held high, breathing in hard, jolting unison. Christina walked across the blood-drenched earth to stand so she and Mark were flanking Kieran. Kieran's face was deadly pale. There was a forlorn, lost look about him. But his eyes searched Christina's face, as if he might find himself there. She clasped his hand. Kieran's eyes traveled from Christina to Mark, and his chin lifted. He stood with his back as straight as a blade. Christina watched him set his slender shoulders, as if preparing to bear a heavy burden. She swore an oath silently to herself. She and Mark would help him bear it.
Prince Oban is dead,
Mark said. His voice lifted to the skies, to Diana and Gwyn circling high above their heads.
Kieran, King's son, is the new king of Unseelie. Long live the king!
They had made it to the edge of the forest, half running the whole way, tripping over tree roots in their haste to get to the imperishable fields. There was no defined border between the fields and the forest. The trees thinned out and Ty stopped dead, his breath catching. Kit stopped beside him, staring. It looked like a movie. He couldn't help the thought, though he felt vaguely ashamed of it. Like a movie with incredible effects and attention to every detailed piece. He had thought of battles as organized, two lines of soldiers advancing on each other. Instead, this was chaos, less a chess game than a collapsed Jenga tower. Soldiers fought in clumps, rolled into ditches, spread in haphazard patterns across the fields. The air stank of blood and roiled with noise. The clang of metal on metal, soldiers shouting, the howl of wolves, the screams of the wounded. The noise. Kit turned to Ty, who had gone pale. I didn't bring my headphones, Ty said. Kit hadn't remembered them either, but then he hadn't really expected to be in the fight. He hadn't even imagined that there would be a fight on this scale. It was massive. The gates of the city of Alicante were open, and more shadow hunters were pouring out, adding to the noise and chaos. Ty couldn't do this. He wouldn't survive being at the center of that, with nothing to protect his ears, his eyes. Do you see Julian? Kit asked. Maybe if Julian was nearby, if they could just get to him. Ty's expression cleared slightly. Hold on. He checked the inside of his jacket, where he'd stashed several knives and a slingshot. He had a pocket full of stones as well. Kit had seen them earlier. Ty jogged to the nearest tree, a big spread-branched oak, and began to shinny up it.
Wait!
Kit ran to the base of the trunk and looked up. Ty was already vanishing among the leaves.
What are you doing?
I might be able to see the others from a higher vantage, Ty called down. A branch rattled. There they are. I see Alec. And Jace. He's fighting some of the cohort. Mark and Christina are over by the redcaps. There's Helen. A troll is coming up on her from behind.
There was a whistling rattle and a rustle of leaves.
Not anymore, Ty added in a pleased voice. And Kit realized he must have used his slingshot. Kit, come up here. You can see everything.
There was no answer. Ty leaned down through the branches, searching the forest floor below the oak. It was bare. Kit was gone.
Alec had found himself a rock, one of the few on the fields. This was a good thing, because he was at his best from a slight elevation. As Jace jogged toward him, weaving through unseelie soldiers and friendly downworlders alike, he watched with brotherly admiration as Alec let arrow after arrow fly with deadly speed and more deadly precision.
Alec!
Jace reached Alec. A troll was running toward them, its tusks stained with blood, its axe raised. Its eyes gleamed with hate. Jace tugged a knife from his belt and flung it, and the troll went down, gurgling, the blade in its throat.
What is it?
Alec didn't glance at him. He knocked his bow again, drew, and impaled a glass-toothed goblin that had been running toward Simon. Simon gave him an offhand salute and went back to fighting a mossy thing Jace suspected was a dryad gone wrong.
The gates of the city are open.
I noticed.
Alec shot the dryad. It ran off toward the trees.
More cohort members are coming onto the field.
So are some of our allies. Gia's here, said Alec.
True.
An ogre came at Jace from the left. He cut it down with quick efficiency.
Where's Magnus?
Alec watched Simon with narrow eyes. He'd joined Clary in cutting down a redcap. The redcaps were the deadliest fairy soldiers on the field, but Jace was pleased to see Clary handle hers with aplomb. She slashed at its knees, and when it fell, Simon lopped off its head. Good, solid parabatai work.
Why do you want to know where Magnus is?
Alec said.
Because the cohort members are all shadow hunters, Jace said frankly. I've been trying not to kill them. I've been using the flat of my blade, whacking them on the heads when they go down, or letting Clary use her knockout runes. But it's a lot harder not killing people than killing them.
He sighed and threw a knife at an attacking pixie.
We could use Magnus's help.
You know, Alec said, vampires are really good at taking people down without killing them. Just grab a person, drink enough blood, and make them pass out, and voila.
Not helpful, Jace said.
Another troll rushed at them. Jace and Alec reached for their weapons at the same time. The troll eyed them, turned, and ran off. Alec laughed.
You're in luck, Parabatai, he said, and pointed toward the edge of Rossland Forest.
Jace followed his gesture. The edge of the trees was deeply shaded, but Clary had put farsight runes on him earlier. He could even see a small figure perched halfway up an oak tree, using a slingshot to take down unseelie soldiers. Interesting. He also saw Magnus, who had just stepped out of the shadows beneath the trees. He was in full warlock regalia, a cloak of black sewn with silver stars, silver chains at his throat and wrists, hair spiked to maximum height. Blue fire spread from his hands. It flowed up into the air, and the already thick clouds began to draw together. Clary jogged over to them, picking her way among the dead trolls and ogres. She was beaming.
I thought he was worried he couldn't do it, she exclaimed. He looks so cool.
Just watch, Alec said, winking at her. And he does look cool.
He shot an approaching troll, just in case anyone was worried he was slacking off. Jace hadn't been. The field was starting to roil in chaos. Werewolves and warlocks, fairies and shadow hunters, turning to look at Magnus as blue-black magic unfurled from his hands, spreading into the sky. The sky itself began to darken. It was as if a sheet were being drawn across it. Light filtered down, but not all light. A dim, bluish light like the illumination of stars or moonshine. Gwyn and Diana circled against the darkening sky. Magnus began to sway. Jace sensed Alec tensing up. This was immense magic, the kind that could drain a warlock's power.
Another figure stepped from the woods, a man with green skin and curling horns, hair as white as Katarina's. He wore jeans and a black t-shirt with white lettering. He placed his hand on Magnus's shoulder.
"Is that Ragnar Fell in a Ragnar Lives t-shirt?" said Clary in amazement.
Ragnar was one of Magnus's oldest friends, and had spent several years pretending to be dead, and then several more pretending to be a warlock named Shade. Jace and Clary had good cause to know him well.
"I wouldn't wear a Simon Lives t-shirt into a battle," said Simon, who was standing within earshot. "Seems like asking for trouble."
Alec laughed. "I think he'll be okay," he said as Ragnar held fast to Magnus, and Magnus raised his hands, releasing more blue-black light.
"He's just giving Magnus some of his strength."
The sky had turned dark as sunset without the gleam of the setting sun. Magnus lowered his hands, as from the woods behind him, protected by the new darkness, exploded the vampires. Lily in the lead, racing across the field to join the battle.
"I know what you said," said Jace, watching as the vampires closed the gap between themselves and the cohort. "But did the vampires get the memo about not killing shadow hunters?"
Alec grinned.
"By the angel,"
Aline swore, her mouth dropping open. Helen whipped around, raising her sword. Fighting alongside the people you loved was always terrifying. You weren't just battling to protect yourself, you were fighting for them as well. She would have battled a greater demon barehanded to save Aline. Aline caught Helen's sword arm.
"My mom!"
She was almost incoherent.
"They're coming out of the city, and my mom is with them!"
The gates of Alicante had been thrown wide, and shadow hunters were pouring through. At the head of the cavalcade, she could see Gia, dressed in battle gear with a massive curved dao in her hand, and centurions, Diego, Rayan, Divya, and others, on either side of her.
"Scariest mother-in-law ever," Helen thought.
Helen and Aline raced toward the new arrivals. As they got closer, Aline broke free and ran to throw her arms around her mother. Gia lowered her sword and hugged her daughter fiercely with her free arm, their dark heads bent together.
"Where's Dad?"
Aline said, drawing back to study her mother's face.
"Still in the city. He's coordinating with Carmen Mendoza and the Silent Brothers to make sure that people inside stay safe." "But how did you get out of the guard?" Aline asked.
Gia almost smiled. "Drusilla let us out last night. She's a very enterprising child.
Speaking of Blackthorns,
Helen, come here."
A little hesitant, Helen approached Gia. She'd always thought her mother-in-law was impressive, but she'd never been more intimidating than she was at this moment. Gia put her arm around her and hugged her so tightly, Helen remembered her own mother, Eleanor, and the strength of her embrace.
"My darling, you've done such a wonderful job at the Institute," Gia said. "I am so proud."
Divya sniffled.
"That is so sweet."
Gia ended the hug, all business again. "All right, everyone, enough gawking. We are entering a battle, one where we will be fighting other shadow hunters, ones we would prefer not to kill. We need to make a Malachi configuration."
Helen dimly remembered what a Malachi configuration was, a temporary magical prison created by Adamus and runes. It was sometimes used by the Inquisitor or the Silent Brothers when they had no other way to hold a prisoner.
Diego responded first.
"On it!"
He grabbed a seraph blade and crossed over into the edge of the fields before kneeling to stab it into the earth.
"I'll take north, Divya. You go south. Rayan, go east. We need to mark the four cardinal directions."
"Bossy, bossy," said Divya, but she was smiling.
Aline moved to help as well, going to the western point. The rest of the newcomers were drawing weapons. Jaime had his crossbow out and was clearly itching to jump into the fight.
Gia said, "Remember what Drusilla said about the Watch's plan. Try not to kill cohort members if you have a choice. Herd them back here toward the configuration. They're still shadow hunters, even if they are misguided." With whoops and cries, the shadow hunters raced onto the field and plunged into the battle just as a sweet chiming noise sounded,
and the Malachi configuration flared up. Light poured from the four angel blades, forming a cage whose walls were made of shifting light. It looked delicate as butterfly wings, prismatic as glass. Helen gazed at the configuration and hoped that their plan to spare the lives of the cohort would not be in vain. The luminous walls of the prison looked too fragile to hold so much hate.
"Let me go!"
Kit yelled. He knew it wouldn't do much good. Emma had him firmly by the back of the shirt and was marching him along the edge of the forest, keeping to the shadows. She looked absolutely furious.
"What are you doing here?" she demanded.
She held her golden sword in her free hand, her gaze darting around in mingled anger and watchfulness.
"When I saw you, I almost had a heart attack. You're supposed to be at the camp." "What about Ty?"
Kit said, twisting against Emma's iron grip.
"He's back there. He's up a tree. We can't just leave him alone."
Something whistled over their heads, and an approaching ogre went down in the heap. A neat circle punched into the middle of its forehead.
"He seems to be doing fine," Emma said dryly. "Besides, I promised Tessa I wouldn't let you near battles or fairies, and this is a battle full of fairies. She's going to kill me."
Kit was stung.
"Why no battles or fairies? I'm not that bad of a fighter."
Emma swung him around so he faced her, thankfully letting go of the back of his shirt as she did so.
"It's not about that," she said angrily.
Her gear was dirty and bloodstained, her face scratched and cut. Kit wondered where Julian was. Parab and I usually fought in battle together, didn't they?
"I don't see what's so important about me," Kit said. "You're more important than you think," Emma said.
Her eyes went suddenly wide.
"Oh, no."
"What?"
Kit looked around wildly. At first he saw nothing unusual, or at least nothing unusual for a huge ongoing brawl between fairies and shadow hunters. Then a shadow fell over them, and he realized. The last time he had seen the Riders of Manon had been in London. There were six of them now, gleaming in bronze and gold. Their horses were shod with gold and silver, their eyes inky black. The riders wore armor without joints or rivets to hold it together, a smooth, liquidy bronze that covered them from neck to foot like the gleaming carapaces of insects.
"Get behind me, Kit."
Emma had gone pale. She stepped in front of Kit, lifting Cortana. "Stay down. They're probably coming for me, not you." The riders hurtled toward them like a shower of falling stars. They were beautiful and awful. Kit had taken only the Herondale dagger which Ace had given him. He realized now how unprepared he had been. How foolish. One of the riders jerked and yelled, clasping at his arm. Ty Slingshot, Kit realized, and felt a rush of reluctant warmth and a sudden stab of fear. What if he never saw Ty again? The struck riders spat a curse. They were almost overhead, and Kit saw their faces, their bronze hair, their sharp, cold features.
"Six of you against one?"
Emma shouted, the wind whipping her hair.
"Are you that dishonorable? Come down, one by one, and fight me. I dare you."
"It seems you cannot count, little shadow-hunting murderer,"
said Ethna, the only woman among the riders.
"There are two of you."
"Kit is a child,"
said Emma, which annoyed Kit, even as he realized she was probably right to say it. Kieran's voice was in his head. "The children of Manon have never been defeated." Across the field, Julian was running toward them. Helen ran alongside him and Aline, but they would never reach Emma and Kit in time.
"Kit is the child," said Atarlam with a smirk. "The descendant of the first heir."
"Give him to us," said Karn. "Give him to us and we might spare you."
Kit's throat had gone dry.
"That's not right," he said. "I have no fairy blood. I'm a shadow hunter."
"One can be both,"
said Ethna.
"We guessed it when we saw you in that dirty city."
She meant London, Kit thought dizzily. He remembered Eohaid looking at him, saying,
"I know you. I know your face. You look just like her,"
said Eohaid now with a smirk.
"Just like Oraline, and just like your mother." "We slew her,"
said Ethna.
And now we will slay you too, and wipe out any trace of your tainted bloodline from this world and ours.
What? Kit forgot his fear, forgot Emma's exhortation that he stay behind her, forgot that anyone was coming to help them, forgot everything except Ethna's words. You killed my mother? My mother?
What do you think happened to her, child?
Ethna said.
Yes, we spilled her blood at the king's orders. She died screaming for you, even though when we tortured her she never spoke your name or revealed your whereabouts. Perhaps that will be a comfort for you in these last moments.
She burst out laughing, and in a moment all the riders were laughing, their horses rearing back against the sky. Cold fire spread through Kit's veins. He moved toward the riders, as if he could reach up and pull them from the sky. He felt the talent rune Ty had given him begin to burn on his upper arm. Emma swore, trying to grab at Kit and draw him behind her. You can't, she was saying. You can't, they're unbeatable, Kit! The riders drew their swords. Metal flashed in the sky. They blocked out the sun as they hurtled down toward Emma and Kit. Emma raised her sword as Ethna, blaze-eyed astride her stallion, smashed into her, blade against blade. Emma was lifted off her feet and hurled backward. She hit the turf with an impact Kit could hear. She scrambled to her feet as Ethna wheeled her steed around, laughing, and started to race to Kit. But the others were coming. They were driving their horses toward Kit with such force that the grass below them flattened. He raised his hands as if he could ward them off with a gesture and heard Eohaid laugh. Something inside him cracked apart, flooding his body with power. It surged through him, electric, exploding from the palms of his hands, with enough force to press him down to his knees. Emma looked at him incredulously as white light shot from his hands and surrounded the riders like a net. Kit could hear them screaming in horror and surprise. They urged their horses higher into the sky. He closed his hands into fists, and the horses vanished, winked out of existence between one breath and the next. The riders, who had already plunged high into the sky to get away, fell screaming through the air to the ground. They crashed down among the surge of battle and disappeared from view. Kit rolled onto his back on the grass. He was gasping for breath.
Dying, he thought. I'm dying, and I cannot be who they said I am. It's impossible. Kit!
Emma was crouching over him, pulling the collar of his shirt aside to place an Arazi there.
Kit, by the angel, what did you do? I don't know.
He felt like there was no breath in his body. His fingers scrabbled weakly against the dirt.
Help me, Emma, help me. Tell Ty.
It's all right. There was someone else bending over him, someone with a familiar face, a calming voice.
Christopher. Christopher, breathe.
It was Jem. Closing his eyes, Kit let Jem's gentle arms lift him from the ground. A darkness came down, like the curtain at the end of a play.
Emma!
Dazed, Emma stumbled a little as she straightened up. She had been bending over Kit, and then Jem had come, and Kit was gone. She was still dizzy from the shock of the rider's attack and the strangeness that had followed. Kit had made the rider's steeds disappear, and they'd fallen into the crowd of battle, wreaking havoc. And now Julian was here, looking at her with worry and concern.
Emma,
Julian said again, putting his hands on her shoulders and turning her to look at him. Are you all right?
Aline and Helen, she said breathlessly. They were with you.
They went back to help the others, he said. The riders are causing chaos on the field.
I'm sorry, Emma said. I didn't know the kid.
I'm not sorry, Julian said, and there was a savagery in his tone that made her look up, her head clearing.
Julian's face was smudged with blood and dirt. His gear was ripped at the shoulder, his boots thick with churned mud and blood. He was beautiful. Whatever happened, whatever Kit did, he saved your life. The riders would have killed you. She was breathless with fear,
Not for herself, but for Julian. The riders hated them both. Gwyn and Diana were circling over the fields, calling out that Oban was dead, that Kieran was king. Perhaps Kieran could order the riders around, perhaps not. At the moment, they had not sworn allegiance to him. They were masterless, here for blood and vengeance, and very dangerous. "Do you need an Urazi?" Julian was still holding her shoulders. She wanted to hug him, wanted to touch his face, and make sure he was whole and unharmed. She knew she couldn't. "No," Emma said. Runes between them were too dangerous. "I'm fine." He exhaled. Slowly he bent his head and touched his forehead to hers. They stood for a moment motionless. Emma could feel the Parabatai energy in them both, vibrating between their skin like an electric current. There was no one around them. They were at the very edge of the battle, almost in the woods. She felt herself smile a little. "Ties up a tree with a slingshot," she said, almost in a whisper. Julian drew back, a look of amusement ghosting across his face. "I know. Safest place for him, I guess. But when I find out how he got out of Magnus's enchantment, I'm not sure which of them I'm going to kill." There was a sudden commotion. Emma looked over the field and saw flashes of bronze. The riders had regrouped. They were laying about themselves with their blades, cutting a path through the shadow hunters. Several bodies lay crumpled on the ground. With a pang, she recognized Vivian Penhollow's strawberry blonde hair, now flecked with blood. Emma grabbed Cortana. "Julian, where's the mortal sword?"
"Gave it to Jace," he said, as they both hurried across the trampled grass. "I hated carrying the thing around. He'll enjoy it." "Probably," Emma admitted. She looked around. The skies overhead roiled blue-black. The bodies of downworlders and shadow hunters were scattered across the field. As they pressed on, Emma nearly stepped on a corpse in a centaurian uniform, eyes rolled to the sky. It was Timothy Rockford. She fought down a wave of nausea and turned away. A red cap surged up behind her. She raised Cortana, the blade slicing the air. "Emma," Julian caught her shoulder. "It's all right," he said as the red cap turned and vanished back into the crowd. "The Unseelie soldiers don't know what to do. Some are still following Oban, some are retreating at Kieran's orders. It's chaos."
"So, it could be ending?" she said, breathless. "We could be winning?"
He drew the back of his hand across her face, smudging more dirt on his cheekbones. His eyes were brilliant blue-green in the odd light of the clouds. His gaze ran up and down her, and she recognized his look as the embrace he couldn't give, the words he couldn't say. "The cohort won't give up," he said instead. "They're still fighting. We're trying not to harm them, but they're not making it easy."
"Where's Horace?" she demanded, craning her head to see what was happening across the field.
"He's kept himself surrounded by his followers," Julian said, leaping over the body of a dead troll. "Jace and the others are trying to get to him, but the cohort are willing to die for him, and we don't want to kill them. Like I said, they're not making it easy."
"We should get back and help."
She started to head across the field, Julian beside her. Downworlders flashed past them, hurling themselves at Unseelie fairies and cohort Nephilim. Jessica Beauséjour was struggling to fend off a black-haired vampire with a seraph blade, while nearby a werewolf rolled on the ground with a massive troll, two sets of fangs snapping. Emma heard someone yell. It was Mark. She could see Christina, too, not far away, sword to sword with Vanessa Ashdown. Christina was fighting carefully, trying not to hurt Vanessa. Vanessa was showing no such care. She held a sword staff in one hand and was pushing Christina back with slamming blows. Mark, though. Mark was facing Eohaid. A rider had found him. Emma and Julian took off instantly, racing toward Mark. He was backing away, bow in hand, taking careful aim. Each arrow that hit Eohaid seemed only to slow him down, not to stop him. No one's killed one of Manon's riders in all the history I know. Emma had killed one of the riders, but Emma had Cortana. Mark had only an ordinary bow, and Christina and Kieran were both caught up in the vast crowd. They would never make it to Mark in time. Emma heard Julian whisper his brother's name. Mark. They were racing flat out over the uneven ground.
Emma could feel the Parabatai energy driving them forward, when something reared up and struck her. She went flying, hit the ground, rolled to her feet. Standing in front of her was Zara. She was cut and filthy, her long hair matted in clumps of blood and dirt. Her colorful Centaurian gear had been cut to ribbons. There were tracks of dirty tears on her face, but her hands, gripping a long sword, were steady, as was her gaze fixed on Cortana.
"Give me back my sword, you bitch," she snarled.
Arrested by Emma's fall, Julian spun around and saw his Parabatai facing Zara Dearborn. Zara was whipping her sword back and forth while Emma watched her with a puzzled look. Zara wasn't a very good fighter, but she wasn't this bad. Emma met Julian's eyes as she raised Cortana.
Go to Mark, her expression said.
Julian hesitated a moment, but Emma could more than handle Zara. He whirled around and ran for his brother. Mark was still fighting, though he was pale, bleeding from a cut across his chest. Eohade seemed to be playing with him, as a cat playing with a mouse, thrusting his sword and then turning it aside to slash rather than stab. It would mean the slow death of cuts and bloodletting. Julian felt a sourness of rage in the back of his throat. He saw Christina slam the hilt of her sword against Vanessa's head. Cameron's cousin went down hard, and Christina turned, sprinting toward Mark. Another rider cut her off. Julian's heart sank. He was nearly there, but he recognized Ethna with her long bronze braid and vicious scowl. She carried a sword in one hand, a staff in the other, and swung out at Christina, knocking her hard to the ground.
Stop!
The word was a gravel-toned bellow. Christina and Mark were both on the ground, their opponents turned, staring. Kieran stood before them, his shoulder knotted with white bandages. It was Winter who had spoken. The red cap stood upright, sword staff in hand. He pointed the sharp end of it at Eohade.
Stop, he said again. The king commands you to stand down.
Eohade and Ethna exchanged a look. Their metallic eyes simmered with the rage. They would not soon forget being cast down from the sky and humiliated.
We will not, said Eohade. Our king was Auron the Elder. He commanded us to slay the Blackthorns and their allies. We shall enact that command, and no word from you shall change it.
We have not yet sworn allegiance to you, said Ethna. You are not our king.
Julian wondered if Kieran would flinch. He didn't.
I am your king, he said. Leave them be and return to Unseelie, or be considered traitors.
Then we will be traitors,
said Ethna, and brought her long sword down. It never struck its target. The air seemed to ripple, and suddenly Windspear was diving toward Ethna, rearing back. He struck Ethna full in the chest with his front hooves. There was a clang as she was flung backward. A moment later, Christina was on her feet, her wrist bleeding, but her grip on her sword steady.
Go to Mark,
she shouted, and Kieran leapt onto Windspear's back and plunged toward Eohade. The rider was like a fall of sparks, graceful and inevitable. He flew into the air, whipping around with his sword in hand, the blade clashing against Kieran's. Mark leapt into the air, a spinning, graceful leap, and caught hold of Eohade, wrapping his arms around the rider's throat from behind. They tumbled to the ground together. Eohade leapt to his feet. Julian raced toward Mark, hurling himself between his brother and the rider, bringing up his sword to parry a slashing blow. Eohade laughed. Julian barely had time to help Mark to his feet when something struck him from behind. It was Karn, the rider, a roaring tower of bronze. Julian whirled and hit back with all his force. Karn staggered back, looking surprised.
Nice hit, Mark said.
It's because of Emma. I can feel the Parabatai bond burning inside me. Thanks, he said, raising his blade to fend off another blow from Karn. Kieran and Christina were harrying Eohade. Ethna was battling Winter to his knees. Even the Parabatai strength wasn't enough, Julian knew. The riders were too strong. It was a matter of time. There was another flash of bronze. Mark muttered a curse. It was Delon, the one-handed rider drawn to his siblings. Now there were four of them. Only Atarlam and Ironwood were still missing, somewhere in the battle. Delon wore a bronze half-mask and swung a golden-spiked flail. He was running toward Kieran, the flail swinging. An axe crashed into him from behind, sending him sprawling. It was Eohaid's turn to swear. Ethna yelled even as Delon struggled to his feet and spun to face his attacker. It was Diego Rosales. He winked at Kieran just as the flail swung toward his head. He fended it off with the flat of his axe. Kieran, who had looked both astonished and pleased at Diego's appearance, leapt from Windspear's back and raced toward Delon. Winter darted after him as Christina swung at Ethna. There was a shattering crack as Christina's sword broke. She gasped, leaping backward. Mark and Kieran turned, stricken. Ethna raised her blade and was blown off her feet. Lines of golden energy laced across the field, lifting each of the riders into the air and sending them tumbling across the grass like scattered toys. Julian turned in astonishment to see Hypatia Vex standing nearby with her arms raised, light cascading from her fingertips. "Magnus sent me over," she said as the battling Nephilim stared at her. Even Winter was staring, looking as if he might have fallen in love. Julian suspected his chances with Hypatia weren't good. "This'll buy some time, but they'll be back." "The Riders of Manon," she sighed dramatically. "Shadow hunters. Why do I always end up mixed up in their business?" Zara was fighting like a wild thing. Emma remembered Zara as a mediocre warrior, and she was. But from the moment their two blades touched, Zara had been electrified. She swung her blade as if she meant to hack down a tree with it. She flung herself at Emma over and over, sloppily leaving her defenses completely open, as if she didn't care if she lived or if she died. And perversely, it was making Emma hold back. She knew she had every right and reason to strike Zara down, but Zara seemed wild with what Emma could only identify as grief. She had lost friends, Emma knew, dead on the field, like Timothy. But Emma suspected her grief was more for the bitterness of losing and the sting of shame. Whatever happened, the cohort would never regain their glory. The lies they had told would never be forgotten. Julian had seen to that.
"You couldn't just leave well enough alone!"
Zara hissed, lunging at Emma with her wrist held stiffly. Emma evaded the blow easily without needing to parry.
"You had to be the moral busybodies! You had to stick your nose everywhere!"
"Zara, you took over the government," Emma pointed out, stepping aside as Zara lunged again. At this rate, Zara would tire herself out. "Your father tried to murder us."
"Because you wanted to hurt us,"
Zara hissed.
"Because there's an us and a them, Emma. There always is. There's the ones who want to protect you and the ones who want to hurt you."
"That's not true."
"Really?"
Zara tossed her filthy, bloody hair back. "Would you have been my friend if I'd asked you?" Emma thought of the things Zara had said about downworlders, about Mark, about half-breeds and perverts and registries and cruelties large and small.
"That's what I thought," Zara sneered. "And you think you're so much better than me, Emma Carstairs. I laughed when Livy died. We all did. Just at the looks on your smug, stupid faces."
Rage flooded through Emma, white hot. She slashed out with Cortana, turning the blade at the last second so that the flat hit Zara, knocking her off her feet. She hit the ground on her back, coughing blood, and spat at Emma as she leaned over, laying the tip of Cortana against her throat.
"Go on,"
Zara hissed.
"Go on, you bitch. Do it. Do it."
Zara was the reason they were all here, Emma thought. The reason they were all in danger. The cohort had been the reason they had needed to fight and struggle for their lives, had been the reason Livy had died there on the dais in the council hall. The yearning for vengeance was hot in her veins, burning against her skin, begging for her to thrust the blade forward and cut Zara's throat. And yet, Emma hesitated. An odd voice had come into her head. A memory of Arthur Blackthorne, of all people.
Cortana, made by Wayland the Smith, the legendary forger of Excalibur and Durandal, said to choose its bearer. When Ogier raised it to slay the son of Charlemagne on the field, an angel came and broke the sword and said to him, "Mercy is better than revenge."
She had taken down the pictures in her room because she was done with vengeance. Christina was right. She needed to be done. In that moment, she knew she would never cut the Parabatai rune, no matter what happened now. She had seen too many Parabatai on the battlefield today. Perhaps being Parabatai was a weakness that could trap you, but so was any kind of love. And if love was a weakness, it was a strength, too. She moved the sword aside.
"I won't kill you." Tears spilled from Zara's eyes and streaked down her dirty face as Emma stepped away from her. A second later, Emma heard Julian call her name. He was there, hauling Zara to her feet by one arm, saying something about taking her to where the prisoners were. Zara was looking from him to Emma, trying not to struggle. She stayed passive in Julian's grip. But her eyes... She was looking past Julian, and Emma didn't like the look on her face at all. Zara made a little choking noise, almost a laugh.
"Maybe I'm not the one you need to worry about," she said, and pointed with her free hand.
Julian went white as chalk. In a cleared space on the field, under the blue-black sky, stood Annabel Blackthorne. It was as if the sight of her formed itself into a fist that punched Emma directly in the guts. She gasped. Annabel wore a blue dress, incongruous on the battlefield. A vial of red fluid glimmered at her throat. Her dark brown hair lifted and blew around her. Her lips curved into a smile. Something was wrong, Emma thought. Something was very, very wrong. And not just the fact that Annabel couldn't possibly be here, that Annabel was dead. Something was more wrong than that.
"You didn't really think you could kill me, did you?" Annabel said, and Emma saw that her feet were bare, pale as white stones on the bloody ground. "You know I am made of other stuff, better stuff than your sister. You cannot make my life run out with my blood as I squeal for mercy."
Julian let go of Zara and ran at her. He tore across the ground and flung himself at Annabel, just as Emma screamed his name, screamed at him that something was wrong, screamed at him to stop. She started toward him, and a blow hit her hard in the back. The pain came a second later, hot and red. Emma turned in surprise and saw Zara standing with a small knife in her hand. She must have taken it from her belt. The hilt was red and dripping. She had stabbed Emma in the back. Emma tried to lift Cortana, but her arm felt as if it wasn't working. Her mind, too, was racing, trying to catch up to her injury. As she tried to call out to Julian, choking on blood, Zara slammed the knife into Emma's chest. Emma's legs went out from under her. She fell.
Chapter 32 Heaven Come Down.
It was all happening again. Annabel was in front of him, and she was looking at him with a sneering contempt. In her eyes, he could see the reflection of himself on the dais in the council hall, soaked in Livy's blood. He saw her in Thule, screaming for Ash. He remembered the swing of his sword, her blood spreading all around her body. None of it mattered. She would kill Emma if she could. She would kill Mark and Helen. She would cut Ty's throat, Andrew's, and Tavi's. She was the ghost of every fear he ever had that his family would be taken from him. She was the nightmare he had wakened and not been able to destroy. He reached her without slowing and plunged his long sword into her body. It slid in as if there was no resistance, no bones, no muscle. Like a knife through air or paper. It sank to the hilt, and he found himself staring into her bloodshot, scarlet eyes, barely an inch away. Her lips drew back from her teeth in a hiss. But her eyes aren't red. They're blackthorn blue. He jerked back, dragging the sword with him. The hilt was dark with blackish ichor. The stench of demon was everywhere. Somewhere in the back of his head, he could hear Emma calling to him, shouting that something was wrong.
"You're not Annabelle," he said. "You're a demon."
Annabelle began to change. Her features seemed to melt, to drip like candle wax. Beneath her pale skin and dark hair, Julian could see the outlines of an unformed Eidolon demon, greasy and white, like a bar of filthy soap, pocked all over with gray craters. The glittering red vial made of etched glass still dangled around its neck.
"You knew my brother,"
the demon hissed.
"Sadnok of Thule."
Julian remembered blood, a church in Cornwall. Emma. He reached for a seraph blade on his belt and named it quickly.
"Sariel."
The demon was grinning. It lunged at Julian, and he plunged the seraph blade into it. Nothing happened.
"This can't be."
Seraph blades slew demons. They always, always worked. The demon yanked the blade from its side as Julian stared in disbelief. It lunged for him, Sariel outstretched. Unprepared for the attack, Julian raised an arm to ward off the blow. A dark shape slid between them. A kelpie, all razor-sharp, pawing hooves and fanged, glassy teeth. The fairy horse reared into the air between Julian and the Eidolon, and Julian recognized the kelpie. It was the one he had saved from Dane Larkspear. It slammed a hoof into the Eidolon's chest, and the demon flew backward, the seraph blade skidding from its hand. The kelpie glanced over his shoulder at Julian and winked, then gave chase as the Eidolon got to its feet and began to run. Julian began to follow. He had only gone a few steps when pain went through him, sudden, searing. He doubled over. The pain was all through him. His back, his chest, there was no reason for it except Emma. He turned around. It was all happening again. Emma was on the ground somehow, the front of her gear wet with blood. Zara knelt over her. It seemed as if they were struggling. Julian was already running, pushing past the pain, every stride a mile, every breath an hour. All that mattered was getting to Emma. As he got closer, he saw that Zara was crouched beside Emma, trying to wrest Cortana from her red-streaked hand, but Emma's grip was too fierce. Her throat, her hair, were wet with blood, but her fingers on Cortana's hilt were unyielding. Zara glanced up and saw Julian. He must have looked like death in human form, because she scrambled to her feet and ran, vanishing into the crowd. No one else seemed to have noticed what had happened yet. A howl was building in Julian's chest. He skidded to his knees beside Emma and lifted her into his arms. She was limp in his grasp. Heavy, the way Livy had been heavy. The way people felt weighted when they had stopped holding themselves up. He curled Emma in toward him, and her head fell against his chest. The grass all around them was wet. There was so much blood. It was all happening again.
"Livy. Livy. My Livy,"
he whispered, cradling her, feverishly stroking her blood-wet hair away from her face. There was so much blood. He was covered in it in seconds. It had soaked through Livy's clothes. Even her shoes were drenched in it.
"Livia."
His hands shook. He fumbled out his steely, put it to her arm. His sword had fallen. His steely was in his hand. The Irazi was muscle memory. His body acting even without his mind's ability to comprehend what was happening. Emma's eyes opened. Julian's heart lurched. Was it working? Maybe it was working. Livy had never even looked at him. She'd been dead when he lifted her from the dais. Emma's gaze fixed on his. Her dark brown eyes
held his gaze like a caress.
It's all right, she whispered.
He reached to draw another Urazi. The first had vanished without a trace.
Help me, he rasped. Emma, we need to use it. The Parabatai bond. We can heal you.
No, she said. She reached up to touch his cheek. He felt her blood against his skin. She was still warm, still breathing in his arms.
I'd rather die like this than be separated from you forever.
Please don't leave me, Emma, Julian said. His voice broke. Please don't leave me in this world without you. She managed to smile at him.
You were the best part of my life, she said.
Her hand fell slack into her lap, her eyes slipping closed. Through the crowd now, Julian could see people running toward them. They seemed to be moving slowly, as if in a dream. Helen calling his name, Mark running desperately. Christina beside him was crying out to Emma, but none of them would reach him in time. And besides, there was nothing they could do. He seized Emma's hand and clutched it tightly, so tightly he could feel the small bones grind under his grip.
Emma, Emma, come back. Emma, you can do this. We've melted stone. You saved my life. We can do anything.
He reached deep into his memories. Emma on the beach, looking back over her shoulder at him, laughing. Emma clinging to the iron bar of the Ferris wheel at Pacific Park. Emma handing him a bunch of limp wildflowers she'd picked on the day of his mother's funeral. His arms around Emma as they rode a motorcycle through Thule. Emma in her pale dress at the midnight theater. Emma lying in front of the fire in Malcolm's cottage. Emma. Her eyes flew open. They were full of flame, golden, and bronze, and copper. Her lips moved. I remember, she said. Her voice sounded distant, almost inhuman, like the ringing of a bell. Something deep inside Julian went cold with fear and exaltation. Should I stop? He said. No, Emma had begun to smile. Her eyes were all fire now. Let us burn. He put his arms around her, the Parabatai connection burning between them, shimmering gold and white. The ends of her hair had begun to burn, and the tips of his fingers. There was no heat and no pain, only fire. It rose up to consume them in a fiery cascade.
Diego flung Zara into the Malachi configuration. There were quite a few other cohort members in there, and she staggered, nearly tripping in her effort to avoid bumping into them. Most of them were looking at her with deep dislike. Diego didn't imagine that Horace's daughter would be very popular right now. She whipped around to glare at him. There was no need for him to slam the prison door. The configuration held whoever was inside, door or no door, but he wished he could.
I will regard this as an announcement that our engagement is over, he said.
Her face screwed up in rage.
Before she could reply, a pillar of white fire rose from the east, hurtling up toward the sky. Screams echoed across the battlefield. Diego whirled to take off running.
A red cap loomed up in front of him, steel-tipped pike a shining arc across the sky. Agonizing pain exploded in his head before he tumbled into darkness.
Mark caught Christina's wrist and pulled her back just as white flame exploded like a tower from the place where Julian and Emma had been moments before. She knew she screamed Emma's name. Mark was pulling her back against himself. She could feel him gasping for breath.
Julian, she thought. Oh God, no, not Julian.
And then,
this must be the curse, to burn them alive. It's too cruel.
Mark breathed.
Look.
Shining figures were emerging from the fire. Not Julian and Emma, or at least not Julian and Emma as they had been.
The flames had risen at least 30 feet in the air, and the figures that emerged from them were at least that tall. It was as if Julian and Emma had been carved from shining light. The details of them were there, their features and expressions. Even Cortana at Emma's side, the blade of heavenly fire the size of a tree.
They're giants, Christina heard someone say. It was Aline staring upward, awestruck. Helen had her hand over her mouth.
Not giants, said Christina.
Nephilim. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when angels came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them.
She took a shuddering breath.
They were the first.
More people were crowding forward from both sides of the battle. As the flames subsided around Emma and Julian, the sky above roiled and snapped. It was as if the heavenly fire had burned away the darkness Magnus had brought down. The shadowy clouds began to break apart and disintegrate. Terrified, the vampires began to flee the field, racing toward the forest. They ran past Magnus, who was on his knees, Ragnar beside him, blue sparks wringing his hands as if they were torn electrical wires. Christina saw Alec running across the field. He reached Magnus just as the warlock slumped, exhausted, into his arms.
Emma, or what Emma had become, a great shining creature, took a hesitant step forward. Christina could hardly breathe. She had never seen an angel, but she imagined this was what it might be like to be near one. They were meant to be beautiful, terrible, and awful as heaven was awful. A light too bright for mortal eyes. No one could survive this, she thought, not even Emma.
Julian was alongside Emma. They seemed to be gaining confidence as they moved. They didn't stomp as giants might. They seemed to drift, their gestures trailed by sweeps of light. Christina could hear the cohort screaming as Julian bent down and picked up Horace, like a giant child plucking up a doll. Horace, who had escaped the whole battle by hiding behind his followers, was kicking and struggling, his voice a thin wail. Christina had only a second to feel almost sorry for him before Julian caught Horace in both hands and snapped his spine in half.
He tossed him aside like a broken plaything. The silence that had gripped the field was broken as people began to scream.
Horace Dearborn's body hit the ground with a sickening thud, only a few feet from Manuel.
This isn't happening. This can't be happening.
Manuel, already on the ground, began to scramble backward. The cohort who were trapped in the Malachi configuration were screaming. He wished they would shut up. He desperately needed to think. Religious training from his childhood, ruthlessly quashed before now, stirred inside him. What shone above him was the power of the angels. Not fluffy, white-winged angels, but the blood-dark angels of vengeance who had given their power to make shadow hunters. And it came to pass on a certain night that the angel of the Lord went out and killed in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when people arose early in the morning, there were the corpses, all dead.
But that made no sense. What was happening was impossible. People did not turn into enormous, shining giants and stride around battlefields dispatching their enemies. This could not possibly have been a plan that the Blackthorns and their allies had. No mortal human had access to power like that. The great, shining thing that had been Emma Carstairs reached down one of its hands. Manuel shrank against the ground, but she was not looking for him. She seized hold of the crouching Eidolon demon that had been Horace's great trick and clamped her fist around it.
The Eidolon demon cried out, a howl that seemed to come from the abyss between worlds. The touch of Emma's shining hand acted on it like acid. Its skin began to burn and melt. It shrieked and dissolved and slid away between her fingers like thin soup. And when people arose early in the morning, there were the corpses, all dead. Terrified Manuel crawled toward Horace's body, still dripping with blood, and dragged it over himself. Horace had failed to protect anyone while he was alive. Perhaps things would be different now that he was dead. How can they possibly live through this? Mark still held Christina. Neither of them seemed able to move. Aline and Helen were nearby. Many other shadow hunters were still on the field. Mark couldn't tear his eyes away from Julian and Emma. He was terrified. Not of them. He was terrified for them. They were great and shining and magnificent, and they were blank-eyed as statues. Emma straightened up from destroying the Eidolon, and Mark could see a great fissure running along her arm, where once her scar from Cortana had been. Flames leapt inside of it, as if she were full of fire. Emma raised her head. Her hair flew around her like golden lightning.
"Riders of Manon!"
she called, and her voice wasn't a human voice at all. It was the sound of trumpets, of thunderclaps echoing through empty valleys.
"Riders of Manon, come and face us!"
"They can talk," Christina whispered. "Good. Maybe they can listen to reason. Maybe."
"Emma!" Mark called. "Julian! We're here! Listen to us! We're here!"
Emma didn't seem to hear him. Julian glanced down entirely without recognition, like a mundane gazing at an anthill, though there was nothing mundane about them. Mark wondered if this was what raising an angel had been like for Clary, for Simon. There was a stir in the crowd. The riders, striding across the field. Their blaze of bronze shone around them, and Mark remembered Kieran whispering to him stories of the riders who had slept beneath the hill until the Unseelie King had called them out to hunt. The crowd parted to let them by. The battle had ended, in any real sense. The field was full of onlookers now, staring in silence as the riders stopped to look up at Emma and Julian. Ethna craned her head back, her bronze hair spilling over her shoulders.
"We are the riders of Manon," she cried. "We have slain the fear, Balog. We have no fear of giants."
She launched herself into the air, and Delon followed. They sailed like bronze birds through the sky, their swords outstretched. Emma reached out almost lazily and plucked Ethna from the air. She tore her apart like tissue paper, shredding her bronze armor, snapping her sword. Julian caught Delon and hurled him back to earth with a force that tore a furrow into the dirt. Delon skidded across the ground and was still. The other riders did not run. It wasn't in them to run, Mark knew. They did not retreat. They were without the ability to do so. Each tried to fight, and each was caught up and crushed or torn, hurled back to the ground in pieces. The earth was slick with their blood. Julian turned away from them first. He put out a blazing hand toward the Malachi configuration and scattered it, sending the bars of light flying. The screams of the cohort pierced the air. Christina tore herself away from Mark and ran toward Emma and Julian.
"Don't!" she cried. "Emma! Jules! They're prisoners! They can't hurt us!"
Helen ran forward, her hands outstretched.
"The battle is over!" she cried. "We've won!